The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel Milwaukee Brewers Podcast Emergency Podcast Edition. The Milwaukee Brewers win a ridiculous home opener, season opener on April 1st over the Minnesota Twins. We had to talk about it. We couldn't just let this random Friday off day pass without talking about this amazing start to the 2021 season. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the podcast. I am not joined by Tom Hodricourt or Todd Rosiak. They're still at work as we record this on Thursday night, putting together a whole bunch of reaction and commentary from the game. All that at jsonline.com. I am joined by special guest Kurt Hoge, my colleague with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Neither one of us, unfortunately, were in the building when fans returned to American Family Field, nay Miller Park. How are you doing with that, by the way? American Family Field, you feeling okay about that?
I feel fine with it. I did call it Miller Park at least three times today, just in passing.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's really hard not to, and that's fine. Totally fair. That's just going to happen to people. So I am not the least bit upset about that, nor should anyone be. But new dawn, new era, and just a ridiculous game, Kurt. Usually when we talk about these things, we do sort of a draft format, I guess, where we sort of like pick the greatest things and sort of go back and forth. I don't know if we need to do that right now, but I know you were digging up some of the things that illustrated how improbable this win was. Brewers win 6-5 in 10 innings. They score three times in the bottom of the ninth, including Travis Shaw, back with the Brewers, gets a two-run double with two outs to tie the game against a nasty, nasty closer. At least he was last year. And then they score in the 10th to win the game. One out in the 10th with nobody on. Danny Robertson led off the 10th and flew out. And, I mean, there's no one in Milwaukee thought that game was anything less than over, right, Kurt? I mean, I was that 11 in a row at that point, or 12 in a row had been set down in order at that point? The Brewers had a runner thrown out at the plate. Everything was going wrong. Kurt, how do you look at this? Like, what's the thing that sticks out here to you? What's the craziest part of this whole deal?
It's just that it felt to the observer from afar that they sure they had their best hitters coming up, but it felt like they weren't going to scratch across three runs against Alex Colomé, who had an ERA under one last year, signed a pretty big deal with the Twins to come in from the White Sox. It seemed like it was game blouses. And then
game blouses. Love it. That is not a reference, by the way, that Tom Hodricourt or Todd Rosiak will give me on this podcast.
Thank you. That's yes. The culture has been broadened just a little bit, but it's just, sometimes it's just something little. A hit by pitch that I wasn't watching too closely at that point, but it looked very, it could have gone either way, possibly with the call. It stands. The Brewers get a big gift from Alex Colomé, who had committed two errors in his entire career, which spans back to 2013. He just makes a boneheaded mistake, should not have thrown it to second, really, for any reason in that spot in the ninth inning where you just... That run on first isn't the tying run. You just need to get the out at first, and you got two outs. And then Max Kepler can't quite make a pretty tough play in right. Although with the way that Christian Yelich hit that ball, it felt like he deserved to get something.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree. But like you said, that throw to second base. So to set the scene, there's one out in the ninth. Colton Wong is hit by the pitch. That puts a runner at first. And then Keston Hira hits a comebacker, and Colomé spins and tries to get the out at second base. I'm sure he was thinking double play to end the game. But with Christian Yelich on deck representing the tying run, if both runners reach, indefensible to try to get the lead runner. You don't need him. He could score. You could let him score all the way on that play. You still have a two-run lead at that point, so why even bother with that guy? Throw the guy out at first. Keston Hira would have been out by a country mile. Instead, you got two on now with one out. Christian Yelich hits the ball to right field to Max Kepler. Bob Uecker definitely thought it was gone. It was not close to gone, but it was hit well. Max Kepler just made a weird, awkward leaping attempt. I don't think he knew where the wall was. It goes out of his glove. I kind of thought it should have been caught. I mean, it's a definite hit, but I really thought that should have been caught. So that scores the first run. And then you have, after a ground up by Abisail Garcia for the second out of the inning, Travis Shaw. He of course, who was not with the Brewers last year after a rocky 2019, played with the Blue Jays in 2020, comes back this year, wins a job as a non-roster guy, wins the third base job on opening day, and he winds up lacing a double to the gap that scores the two tying runs. I believe we've looked at win probability before, I believe this was a 98% probability that the Brewers were going to lose this game, which is astronomically high. Even some of the more ridiculous wins in recent years have not quite hit that 98% threshold. Is that right?
I think that would be correct. We'd have to go back and look a little more specifically, perhaps. But after Dane Robinson flew out, it was a 2% win probability for the Brewers. After Avisail Garcia grounded out, it was 15%. And then after Travis Shaw doubled, it appears that it spiked to around 65%-ish. So,
yes.
So that was about a 50% swing by Travis Shaw. And, I mean, he put himself in scoring position to be the winning run. And it did not work out in that moment. But the Brewers would later come through with runners in scoring position, which was a real bugaboo last year and early in the game. It just felt like a continuation of same old, same old.
Yeah, they were struggling on offense against Kenta Maeda. I think people forget, I forget, that he took second in the Cy Young voting in the American League last year. I mean, Shane Bieber got every first place vote, so second place is, you know, not really, not truly in the hunt to win that award. Shane Bieber won it going away, but he was very well respected. I mean, he was great with the Twins, took a no-hitter into the ninth against the Brewers last year before Eric Sogard broke it up. So he's had success against the Brewers, certainly did last year. Great pitcher, very good pitcher. And, he wasn't quite as sharp as I'm sure he would normally be. He did not last five innings. He walked in a run for a guy who only walked 10 batters all of 2020. That's an interesting thing to note as well. But, you get... I did this list earlier this week it was something from a couple years ago, the most memorable opening day wins or losses, opening day games that involved the Brewers. And I had a list of 11. Number one on my list is one before either one of us was born, in 1980, when Sixto Lescano hit a grand slam, a walk-off grand slam to win the game. And then number two was 2019, when Lorenzo Cain makes a leaping catch at the wall to save the game. 5-4 win. Would have been a tie game if that ball leaves the yard against Josh Hader. I gotta say, I don't know where this ranks because of sort of the recency thing. This might be number one. I don't know if you can top what we saw today from the Milwaukee Brewers. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's tough to top a home run, much less a grand slam.
Indeed. But it was tied at that point.
They were down in the dumps. Mm-hmm. Yeah, as you said, 10 straight outs before Colton Wong was hit by a pitch in the ninth. They left a lot of guys on base before that. So, yeah, recency bias, it's going to be tough, if not impossible, to rank it. But it's just another game in the recent pantheon of very exciting, memorable opening day games. You go back to the 2018 game in San Diego, where the Brewers blew the lead in the ninth. I believe that was Corey Knable coming off his all-star campaign where he blew the opening day save. Then they end up winning it. Jeremy Jeffers has a wild escape in extra innings, and Orlando Arcia had a big hit in that game as well, as he is apparently prone to do.
This is so Orlando Arcia's wheelhouse. 2018 as well. He's got the go-ahead single in the 12th inning that helps the Brewers win that game, scores G-Man Choi. And here again in the 10th inning, after Josh Hader just owned three batters in his half of the 10th, you know, I'm sure teams, when they get a runner at second base in extra innings like they do now in Major League Baseball, the odds of scoring are very good. When you got Josh Hader coming out, the odds just aren't very good because he's going to strike out half the guys he sees, maybe more. So he crushes three batters and strands the go-ahead run at third base. And then you get the Brewers have the runner at second, Lorenzo Cain, Omar Narvaez singles. Up comes Orlando Arcia. And I feel like he is Johnny on the spot. I feel like we don't recognize that he has struggled offensively as much as he has in his career, because he has all these hits and they're always singles, like opposite field singles, or just, you know, seeing eye things through the hole on one side of the infield. And today it's a fielder's choice, a bounding ball that is hit just slowly enough to second base where Lorenzo Cain can slide under the tag for the winning run, the 6-5 victory clinched. I don't know how Orlando Arcia always ends up in the spot. Didn't even start this game, but a lot of people contributing to this one. And yeah, I think this might have to be number one on the list. Like, you know, Sixto Lescano's grand slam is cool and all, but that was a tie game. That wasn't a rally from three runs down or two runs down with two outs in the ninth. Like, that stuff, That stuff, this would be in any season regarded as one of the most improbable wins of the season, if not number one in most seasons. And it happens in the very first game of the year. That's crazy.
And we'll see what ends up happening with this team, right? If they end up sneaking into the playoffs by one win, you're looking at, you know, the improbable win on the first day of the year against a very good team, to get them to that spot. I don't want to overlook how incredible Josh Hader was in that outing. It was a different level of Josh Hader, it feels like, than we've seen for a while. I mean, he pumped 90, he hit 100. Baseball Savant had it at, I think, 99.6, which we're going to round up on that one. On a strike to strike out Luis Arraez. And the crazy thing, I mean, Josh Hader strikes out 2-3 guys in an inning. It happens all the time. He's, if not the highest strikeout rate in baseball history, he's either second or third behind Kimbrel and Aroldis Chapman. So he's right up there. But Arraez and Williams Astudillo, the first two hitters of the 10th inning for the Twins, they don't strike out. Williams Astudillo is notorious for putting everything in play. He only walks 2% of the time, and he strikes out 4% of the time. Absolutely unheard of, especially in this era of baseball. Just an absurd ability to put the bat on the ball. And Luis Arraez, he's a guy who could hit 340 very easily because he doesn't strike out at all 8% of the time. And you've got those guys striking out back-to-back. And looked like, I mean, they were just completely blown away. It wasn't they were just fooled by a pitch. They just couldn't.
Yeah.
They didn't have a chance.
You put the odds at that at less than 1%, those guys striking out back to back. Is that right?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to butcher some mathematics here, you multiply 8% and 4% and you've got a little over 0.3%. And then it's Josh Hader. So the odds are probably a little higher of him striking out those guys back to back. So somewhere under 1%, 0.6, 0.7% in our very, very official mathematics course.
Yes. Astudillo, portly catcher, love the guy, but that's why he's in Major League Baseball, because he does make contact. He is not someone you can just put away, and Josh Hader made him look silly on one swing in particular where he just had no prayer. It was vintage Josh Hader, and he ends up getting the win, 3 strikeouts, 3 batters. Brewers really kind of made a mess of a really good story with Randy Dobnak, who came in for the Twins. He just signed a long-term contract. He's a guy who is a independent league find. He was, you know, driving Uber and Lyft to sort of make ends meet for a while, and he found his way back into baseball, into the big leagues, and just signed a really lengthy contract before the season. And then of course the Brewers treat him very rudely, and he does not record an out in that 10th inning, although, you know, very clearly the Brewers win this game because of the rule with a runner starting on second base. So Lorenzo Cain sliding home, manufactured run that does not happen otherwise. How do you feel about that rule? I last year it was sort of like, whatever, this is not a real season anyway, who cares what the rules are, quite honestly. But then you get to the, you know, start of this season, and we're still doing it, still having a runner start at second base in extra innings. How do you feel about it? Have you come to terms with it a little bit after 2020?
I was a pretty big fan of it last year. I'm not sure how I feel about it being here permanently, because it's not, I'm not a baseball purist. That's it's not generally how I consider my philosophy. But it's not really how baseball is meant to be played, and like games are meant to be decided. But then again, each team, I mean, it's the same rule, and it comes down to a matter of executing with what you have. And also, it probably helps my perception of the rule that I would lean to suggest that it favors the Brewers, with the fact that, especially in a game like today, where they come from behind, so they haven't used their big guns, they could bring out big strikeout guys and lower the chances of a ball falling in, like Orlando Arcia's or Omar Narvaez, kind of his humpback liner into right that moved Lorenzo Cain to third before the walk-off. They can go to Hader, they can go to Devin Williams, they can go to Drew Rasmussen. I mean, they got a stable of dudes that can rack up major strikeouts. So I don't hate the rule. I think I would probably prefer it to go back to the way it was, but also today's game was at 4 hours and 14 minutes.
Yeah.
And that was in 10 innings. So I would have kept watching, but it's tough to, I mean, that game could have gone 13, 14 innings and you're playing 6 hours on opening day. So it's got its pros and its cons.
Yeah, 414, 4 hours and 14 minutes, four, of course, the 414 area code. But you're absolutely right. Hader and Devin Williams in particular are just elite, elite strikeout pitchers. You can't be too worried when those guys step onto the mound if there's a runner at second base. You can't be too worried that that guy's going to score, for sure. I mean, it certainly feels like they have the advantage. And then that proved to be the case today. A really good showing. You know, by the way, going back to Luis Arias,
Arias,
yeah.
Technically, I guess.
That guy's annoying. I mean, he just is he's really good. He's a great leadoff hitter. He put the ball in play a bunch. He did get two hits, drove in a run, had a hit against Brandon Woodruff to open the game that was stolen away out of the air by Luis Urias at shortstop. The very first out of the game was a spectacular web gem, a great diving play, which was pretty cool. But the Brewers did hit the ball very, very well. I mean, they come out of this with 11 hits, of course. Last year, there were not many games with double-digit hits at all. Not many games of more than, like, five hits. I mean, there were, but offense was a big problem for them last year. And the middle of the order just really went to work. I mean, Christian Yelich had two solid hits, including that run-scoring shot off of Max Kepler's glove. Abisail Garcia had a couple hits and moved the runners over in scoring position there in the ninth inning, for whatever that's worth. And Travis Shaw, two hits, three RBIs, takes the bases-loaded walk that I mentioned against Maeda. And, you know, I kind of feel okay about Travis Shaw. Unquestionably, if you look at the Brewers lineup, third base is the most unsettled spot. That's the spot where you don't really know for sure what that's going to look like. You've got Daniel Robertson in the mix. You got Orlando Arcia in the mix. And you've got Travis Shaw, who's probably, especially against right-handers, going to be the guy most nights. And I think if that's your biggest question mark in the lineup, that's great, because I think you can live with what's there and have really only one spot that's not, you know, locked down. That guy's a regular every single day. But man, does it feel good to see Travis Shaw hit the ball like, you know, like he used to after 2019, where he just fell off a cliff. He looks renewed. He looks great. This is really promising. One game is, you know, you don't have to tell people one game is not something you can draw a single conclusion from, but I don't know. I'm feeling pretty good about the Travis Shaw experience. Definitely right now I am.
Yeah, today was definitely a boon to the Travis Shaw stock. But even coming into the season, I was generally pretty optimistic about him, as well as the offense in general, kind of just a bunch of dudes that seemed like they were bound to improve on, you know, their 2020 season being just so much below their career numbers. But Travis Shaw was one of those guys who last year kind of turned things around a little bit, and there was a lot working in his favor, whether you want to, you know, just look at it from he's going to be facing a lot of righties. That's favorable for him. He's in a pretty comfortable situation. He's familiar here. It's a good park for him to hit in. But the key for him is he's a big fly ball hitter. Mm-hmm. But a big reason for his struggles, in addition to striking out a punch, which will always do you in, is he was getting too much loft on the ball, swinging up too much, or I don't know what the exact mechanics of it were that led to the issue, but his average launch angle went way up, and it went from, you know, hitting the balls in the air, which is good, and hitting them at a good angle, though, with good, you know, good speed, to he's popping everything up. And today, seeing him draw that walk with the bases loaded, that's vintage Travis Shaw plate discipline and driving the ball to right field. It looked like the Travis Shaw that we've seen many times. We'll see if he can hold it throughout the year, but he'll get ample opportunities. And like I said, I went into the year pretty optimistic about his chances.
Yeah, Travis Shaw, not, however, fleet of foot. And that played into one of the, he'll tell you that, played into one of the bigger moments of this game. In the bottom of the fifth, the bases are loaded, one out. Omar Narvaez dumps a shot down the left field line. Yelich is on third. He scores no problem. That makes it a 3-2 game. And then Jason Lane, the new third base coach, I couldn't really tell what happened there. It seemed like there was some miscommunication, or maybe Travis Shaw just didn't expect to get the go signal at that point with the ball, you know, right in front of the left fielder. Shaw hesitates, then goes, tries to score, and he is thrown out by a country mile. The catcher waiting for him. There was no slide, no play. It was merely like, yeah, you're going to be out now. That looked like the pivot moment of this game, because the Brewers after that, Daniel Vogelbach grounds out, ends the threat. Brewers go into the next inning, down 3-2. Byron Buxton promptly hits a 2-run homer to make it 5-2. And the Brewers, I think 11 straight guys, 11 or 12, go down in order before Colton Wong gets hit by a pitch there in the ninth. So in the moment of this, I mean, that looked like it, right? Like that looked like, oh no, Ed Cedar's gone. Lightning rod. I think all third base coaches are, but he's been a lightning rod for Brewers fans. Oh no, Jason Lane just stepped into the same bucket. It looked like that was going to be the moment we were talking about at the end of this game.
Yeah, it was just, I think it was just a misread, miscommunication. I mean, and errors that are, that happen with players quite, you know, like Alex Colomay made a judgment error. And it looked like you're saying something like Travis. I mean, maybe Lane thought Travis Shaw was coming at full speed, but it looked like he was just getting up to speed and maybe starting to shut it down a little bit because he had to wait and see if it fell, if the ball fell. So yeah, that was definitely the low point of the game. And then soon thereafter, I don't think it was immediately after. I think it was in the seventh that Byron Buxton hits the
score. Yeah, there was an inning in between. Yep, yep.
But. Kudos to the you know, the Brewers relief staff of, I mean, Yardley, after giving up the home run, he locks it down. JP Fireisen looked really good.
Really good.
I think he may have walked Rise, which is not something that happens very often. He's not a big walk guy, so.
Yeah, he walked him, but that was that, no, it was Lindblom who walked a guy after he had struck him out. It was a bad call. So yes, okay. Yes, Fireisen, yeah. did walk Arise. Yes.
So yeah, I mean he's a potential guy that could be a setup for, you know, or even a possible one of their guys and in late games with the lead. I mean, he's got very good stuff. So that was an encouraging sign, I'm sure, for the Brewers, even down 5-2. Not sure if they're going to come back. And then Josh Lindblom, who his role is going to be all over the place, and we saw that today coming in a 5-2 game. Although I think the plan may have been to try to get him and Freddie Peralta some work lined up with how, you know, kind of the timeline of when they've been working, because we got the peak Freddie Peralta experience though today.
We sure did. And you're right, to finish your thought, Fireisen and Lindblom very effective in their two innings of work and efficient 15 and 14 pitches respectively. That plays into Hader, where he throws 9 of 11 pitches for strikes and dismisses three guys. So about as almost an immaculate inning there. I mean, that's about as efficient as you can get. Did he throw? Yeah, he threw 2 balls and 9 strikes for 3 punchouts. That's ridiculous. But yes, the Freddie Peralta experience was interesting. 53 pitches in 2 innings, not efficient. He threw a lot of fastballs. But interesting to me, because he always throws fastballs, but interesting to me watching his off-speed stuff, which, you know, we've talked about how his repertoire has expanded a little bit this year. He can throw up to 4 pitches now, you know, maybe not consistently or effectively, but he was throwing that slider 4 strikes. That was his reliable pitch. And with the bases loaded, 2 outs, full count, that's Miguel Sano batting, I believe, although I don't quote me on that. I'm not positive.
I think you're right. I think it was Sano.
He throws a breaking pitch that strikes him out, perfect pitch, and the Brewers survive what could have been a really, really huge inning. I mean, I mentioned that on the JS Online game blog at the time. That's a low, you know, possibly a subtle turning point. I mean, it's a 3-2 game, I believe, at that point. So it's not like, you know, that was a major, major moment. You know, the Twins do end up scoring to widen their lead, but yeah, that was a roller coaster. And you know, I think it's going to be that way still with Freddie Peralta. I don't know if we'll ever be truly settled, but he does get into a groove sometimes. And if he can throw that slider for strikes, you know, and throw it in those counts, then my goodness, it's hard not to dream huge on that guy.
Yeah, that's my question with him as a starter is the ability to consistently throw strikes with multiple pitches. Obviously, the stuff is filthy, but he tends to work himself into jams with walks and more often than not seems to wiggle his way out and I think he's been really good in a relief role. So we will see how long he's able to last in a go around in 2021 as a starter. I think the Brewers appear to be committed to trying to get as much out of him as they can. But when he's in relief, he seems to provide those, you know, these pivotal moments when you kind of look back at a game and you're like, okay, Freddie Peralta, the game could have turned for the worse right here. There was a few times last year. I'm thinking one that pops to mind was one at Wrigley Field where he entered in just a jam that I think Brandon Woodruff left. Turns the game around. The Brewers take the lead the next inning. It's just him, Freddie Peralta in the middle innings, when they use him there, it's a real weapon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what they had to do today. Brandon Woodruff did not make it out of the fifth inning. He did not make it into the fifth inning. He went four frames, one of his shortest outings as a starter. He did give up six hits, three runs, five strikeouts, two walks. You know, he gave up a lot of light contact. He gave up three runs, all of them with two strikes and two outs, which, you know, is an indictment of being able to just get a swing and miss pitch when you need it, or be able to get a guy out when you need it. But I didn't feel like the Twins were exactly crushing him, you know, like Luis Arraez just drops a little single into center field to score a two out run after Simmons had moved to second base, you know, on a Kenta Maeda sacrifice. And it didn't feel like he was getting drilled. And I thought he was mixing his pitches and looked really good. So the Brewers got a lot of luck in this game because of this runner at second base in 10th inning. That rule in play here obviously helps them. The mistake by Colome, Josh Donaldson getting injured in the first inning. So instead of Donaldson being up there in that big spot against Hader, it's Jake Cave with a runner at third and two outs, a left-handed hitter, instead of Donaldson, their big free agent acquisition, who just couldn't stay healthy last year and left after a double to kick off this game. He doubled and had to leave the following inning. So the Brewers got lucky, but I also felt like Woodruff got burned by some bad contact. And I feel like in most games with the stuff he had, he would have, you know, lasted five, six innings and been pretty good.
Yeah. Obviously he wasn't at his crispest just with some of the guys that did come around to score. And just it's the way things play out. Sort of sometimes that guys were on base, but a lot of times, yeah, they were getting on base in sort of some luckier situations. Only three of the top 12, hardest hit balls by Statcast in the game were off Woodruff. Donaldson double. One of those was a ground out by Max Kepler. And then the other one was an Andrelton Simmons single. I think that one was the one where Colton Wong almost made a ridiculous play up the middle. So the contact on him wasn't all that tough. The balls just seemed to find Andrelton Simmons found green grass. Luis Arraez kind of dumped one into left field to score a run. So it was a bit of bad luck, but I don't think that was nearly as sharp as we will see Brandon Woodruff in starts to come, because he showed some flashes that he's got, you know, he's very close to being able to put together a seven inning, six inning, no run, 10 strikeout game. Just couldn't quite put as many guys away today.
So the Brewers now go to game two with the 1B in the two-tiered, two-punch ace rotation of Brandon Woodruff and Corbin Burns. Burns will start on Saturday against the Twins. They'll play again, the two teams, on Sunday as well. Have this baked-in off day on Friday. I don't know how you feel about it. This is not a COVID thing. This was scheduled into the 2020 season as well, before that schedule got obviously totally reworked. They were going to have an off day. They'd never had one at Miller Park before. I mean, typically these off days, I think everyone kind of can understand that you bake them in so that if you have a rainout on opening day, you can still have all the pomp and circumstance, the same ticket holders get to see opening day because you have a built-in off day. Well, it doesn't really make sense if you have a roof, because they're, you know, going to play opening day on schedule, barring a power outage or something ridiculous. So I don't understand it. It doesn't make any sense to me to do this at Miller Park, but whatever. We'll have to, we do get to marinate in a pretty crazy win here before getting back to it on Saturday, where the season really begins in earnest.
Yeah, if you're the Twins, you want to be playing tomorrow?
Absolutely.
I'm sure baseball players in general will probably gladly trade the off day tomorrow for one in August.
Absolutely true. Like, especially now that they've played before fans for the first time in forever. Right, they're feeling it right now.
You're riding high. Even the Twins, I mean, that was an emotional, stressful game, and you just kind of want to roll back out there tomorrow. So this is a very weird schedule quirk.
Yeah, Major League it's
baseball,
strange.
Not known forever. They would never do a weird schedule quirk, though. So
Major League Baseball has its things that it likes to throw at us. But we obviously are not going to do an emergency podcast for every Brewer game. We'll still be doing these weekly. I'll be joined by Tom Hodricourt and Todd Rosiak for the most part to review each week, look ahead, look back. But just for this opener, had to do something, had to talk about it. Just a ridiculous game. I can't believe it. I can't believe the Brewers won. I from the seventh inning on, once Byron Buxton hit a moonshot off the scoreboard, I just sort of assumed, okay, it's fine. The Brewers have lost their opener a lot. I think they're actually I want to say 11-1 since going to the National League. That might be something I just made up, but they're fairly consistent. You know, they don't really, it doesn't really go one way or the other, but you know, they've had fine teams that haven't won their first game and likewise bad teams that have won their first game. So I wasn't putting much stock in it, but what a game, what a game, Kurt. Any last things that stick out to you?
No. I think there was a lot that happened in that game. So no, it was just great to have baseball back and to hear good fans coming through your TV set and not piped in audio, and kind of you could almost feel the secondhand rush as Josh Hader was just pumping straight fastballs.
Yeah.
In that 10th inning, it was nice to be able to enjoy that and kind of have some optimism.
I was watching the game on TV and listening to Bob Uecker on the call. He sounded good. It didn't sound quite right. The fans, you know, it was nice to get a fan reaction after a certain play, or, you know, to hear some boos actually felt really good, because the pre-recorded audio, the pre-recorded fans were not booing, you know, makes sense. MLB is not going to automatically program negative fan reaction, but it felt authentic to have people booing for whatever it was, for the sausages being virtual, I guess. And so it did sound good to have some of that reaction. It wasn't quite the hit that you normally get with, at least to me on the radio broadcast, with a normal baseball game, but it's still closer. And obviously it's a different than what we saw last year, and certainly appreciated. Kurt, thank you for joining me on this emergency podcast situation. This is awesome. Have a good night, man.
Yeah, thanks.
Find us on Stitcher, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. You can leave a rating and review. We'll be back to review the whole week here in a matter of time with Tom Hodgecourt and Todd Rosiak. For now, I'm J.R. Radcliffe. Thanks for tuning in. We'll catch you again soon.